Hello.
Hi, sorry. Hi, it's me, Camille. I was having a small heart palpitation because I thought I liquidated the wrong account. It's like, crap. No. So, one second, I'm still making sure. I'm still making sure. So, my client that drives me insane.
Driving some more insane.
He's driving me more insane. So I had a conversation with him this week, and I don't know if I told you, but he had me change. He's had this one account that's the account that I kind of use for his ridiculous decision making. You know, like when he's decided he's going to short the market or, you know, his big bets. I use this one account. And then the other accounts I manage with portfolio management, PM. And so with this account, and over the last, I would say, 3 years, we've gone from MLPs at the absolute worst time, right before the MLPs took a dump, to managed futures, to international. Last week he had me sell out half of his international and buy US equities. And then 2 days ago he said, liquidate it. So I've stopped fighting with him on what he does in that account and I let him do it, but then I always make sure I point out the difference between what he's doing there and what I'm doing. And so to give you an idea of my email, he's averaged negative 6.5% since 2014.
Wow.
At the same time where the account that I have discretion on, we have averaged, well, so that's 3 years now, a little bit more than 3 years, I've averaged 10.5% net fees. So,
Nice.
right. But he's still, I mean, he's a lovely man. He's a lovely man. He's kind of an ass on email, but lovely to speak with on the phone. And it's really hard because you just have to kind of like take his emails with a grain of salt and then call him. And then, you know, like all weekend long, I usually don't look at my emails. So like I get the Monday morning emails from his thoughts throughout the weekend, and he's been traveling, so he's got a lot of time and, you know, the air and whatever. And it's like, you know, blah, 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 and this account, and yesterday you did 0.32, and, you know, the S&P did 0.33, you know, in one day. And you're just like, you can be driven crazy. But then you call him, and he's like, oh, I'm just really depressed. My dog died. You know, it's like, God, why are you taking it out on me? So he's the one that I have 5 million of, and he's got like 50 million or whatever, 60 million at UBS. So I just said to Joe, can you please just do some bonds with him? So Joe's been buying, finally getting him to buy bonds, which is probably a contraindicator. And I had to raise cash, and he had told me to sell out this account. But of course, the firm, the process of selling out the account for the type of management it was in UMA, it's just been confusing and annoying. And so today I finally just got it into my discretionary so I could sell it out. And then I go and sell it out, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, how does it have 109,000 in
Really?
realized gains? I'm like, I must have sold out the wrong account. So as I'm supposed to be calling you, I was having a complete heart attack. Like, I must have sold out the wrong account. But yeah, I was the right account. So anyway, I you know, I like, part of me wants to fire him.
know. I know.
We'll see if Joe can move the needle a little. I don't know. But I was gonna get sick to my stomach there if I sold out the wrong account, because that would have been a total. And I knew in my heart that it wasn't, because I don't hold that many positions, and there was a UMA with three managers, so you can imagine the numbers of positions.
Yeah, that's so, been huge.
It's been a total nightmare. Anyway, yeah, I don't know how he has realized gains of 109,000. I have no idea.
We have pretty good markets.
Well, I know, but this has been like, this account has been just, I mean, a disaster, his decision making. But I guess it's because in the last 12 months, that's what he made.
Yeah.
When I had him in UMA, I had him in something good. He made some money.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
So
he
asked me, what are your institutions, like what are your like sophisticated clients do? And I'm like, well, they let me do a managed portfolio of, you know, that's strategic and well allocated, and you know, they don't second guess it, and we move things into things that haven't been doing well. And his philosophy, like, what did I say? I suggested something to him the other day, and he's like, yeah, but that's gone down so much. I'm like, that's exactly why. Like, hello, investing 101.
Right. He wants everything to go up.
He wants to make investments based on historical returns.
Right.
Yes. Okay, so have you spoken with Nicholas?
I haven't spoken with him since, let's see. No.
Okay.
You mean about our trip, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought I was supposed to speak with him today, but I didn't see him on my list. I did, and then I didn't, so maybe he can't.
Oh, okay. Probably. We had an audit, we have administrative assistance week, he's shorthanded anyway to begin with, so I wouldn't be surprised.
The normal stuff.
The normal stuff, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So other than Crazy Land, how are you doing?
Crazy Land. I know I have one Crazy Land client. He drives me insane. Good. I feel like I'm doing very well with like the processes and stuff like that, and you know, make the meetings and the scheduling and everything like that. But I do feel that I need to like stop a minute and reprioritize again because of things like this where, you know, I get so nervous that I'm missing something. And or I need to figure out how to use my staff better. I don't know.
So what does that look like? I mean, what's that feel like when you're feeling that way? I mean,
I had a conversation with a client last week that I had spoken to a couple of months ago, and I said, I was telling them that maybe they want to do their charitable donations directly from their RMDs. And
great idea.
But then I kind of forgot that conversation, and then I was talking to them on the next month's call, and I usually go back and look at notes, but this was an in-between call. So I guess I didn't make sure I made note of it, and then another call comes, and I have a conversation with them because they mentioned that they had a TIA Crest small account, and they weren't taking distributions, and I'm like, oh, well, we can, you know, you should take them. You have to take them. And, oh, well, what can you do to help me? And I said, well, we can take more than you need. If you tell me how much you need there, I can take it here. And then we ended up taking both. And then she called and said, okay, my husband and I are talking about how much we're going to donate out of there. Well, it's already done. You know, I feel like, you know, that's my fault. I mean, granted, I did ask them at the time we were going to do it, and they went to their accountant, who, by the way, was an enthusiastically endorsed accountant who I think I mentioned to you. I spoke with him and just didn't rub me right. Like, I just, there was something wrong with the conversation. He just didn't make me feel confident at all. And I kind of dropped it and didn't put him on my list. So when I got an email from her husband that was all this mumbo jumbo about, well, the accountant wants us to do some calculations and figure out, you know, whether it's better for us to do the RMD or to just itemize or this or that, and maybe we should do those calculations first, and he wants to meet with us. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Like, what? Just like, either let's make it really simple or let's make it complicated. So, so that was part of it. But I can't say to her, your accountant, like, totally messed it up. Because I just took part in messing it up. But, you know, then I said, okay, you know what we can do? Because they don't have that big. Their IRAs are not that big. And their accountant, and by the way, you know why their IRAs are not that big? Because it was recommended that they use their IRAs to fund the help that they wanted to do for their children.
What?
Yeah, I know.
They took distributions?
Yeah.
So they shouldn't have when they weren't of age, or what?
Yes. No, they were of age, but they took more than they needed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they don't have big IRAs. It's not like, if they had like $5 million in an IRA, and you're trying to bring it down and whatever so the RMD comes down, maybe. But, you know, you're low tax year or whatever. But they're very retired now. They don't have their business anymore. Like, they have plenty of cash that they could have done that from.
Yeah. So they just overdid it in terms of distribution. Yeah. Not the worst thing in the world, but not the best either.
Well, it doesn't seem like this is the thing they're saying. Is it seems like the advice they're getting is not the best, and I can't. I just revert back to ask your CPA, who's the one that's going to be doing your return. So
wouldn't
anyway,
always,
but I
wouldn't it always make more sense to take an RMD for charitable purposes than to give away stock?
Oh my, well, it depends on what your tax bracket is, because giving away stock means that you're just saving the capital gains tax, whereas
right.
If you're giving away your RMD, it's income.
Right. So it's just more direct. I mean, it just seems like the math would always work out better unless
right.
You have, unless you're, you know, you're. And these retired people aren't going to be in a wicked tax bracket. Yeah.
Right. Well, the other thing with them is, so I said, you know, the RMD was taken however many weeks ago, and they said, oh, well, then send it to our bank. I'm like, no, wait a minute, no. I mean, that's counted in your cash flow, you know? Like, when I do your monthly draw and cash flow, you can't just add $9,500. Like... You know? No, we understand, but send us the money. I'm like, okay. Accountant
right.
said we should have it. The accountant said we should spend it. I said, okay. Your accountant's yeah. done it. Your accountant's done a financial plan with you? I don't think so. He claims to be a CFP, but I don't think he is. That's where I'm talking about. It's like, you know, just kind of feeling on top of it, feeling like I'm ahead, not behind a little bit,
yeah.
and whenever I get like this, then I start to shut down the trying to get new money
mm-hmm.
because I worry, am I going to be able to handle it? So
yeah.
How do I deal with that, coach?
Well, for one thing, give yourself a break and give yourself a little more time, okay, to prepare for your call.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So, look, I'm everybody's the same. You know, we all want to waste time and do things that we like to do, and then we rush at the last minute to do everything we have to do, and preparing for a call is not the most fun thing in the world. So So we tend to put it off until it's time to pick up the phone, and we look quick, and then
we miss that.
We mess up. We miss things. So make sure that when you get off the phone, I would give myself 10 minutes before and 10 minutes after.
Okay.
Each call. Just don't rush into the next thing. Write some notes in there. Figure out what you have to do. Take some more about the call. Write some more notes. And then, take it to Janet and tell her what we need to do, okay? Or write her a note and say, this is what we need to do.
Okay.
Okay, you can either type those notes into the computer and tell her, or you can just handwrite them and then hand her a note with it. But take the time after your call, and then when you get the folder, take 10 minutes to look at it and think about the client.
Yes, and we're getting better again about the folders. But one thing that I was wondering, I always pull up the previous summary.
Yep.
When I make the agenda, but I'm thinking maybe I should have her pull up, print the previous summary for my folder as well, so I have it as a reference.
Unless you're going to look at it. If you look at it, that's fine. If you look on the computer and you remember and look at it. But if you're not looking at it and just looking at the folder and there's nothing in there, then have her print it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I did notice that for one of my calls this week, she left the previous agenda where I make a lot of notes on it. And that's probably a good idea, too.
Yeah, I know it sounds kind of backward to keep these folders and the notes and the agendas and things in there, but I think for a while you keep them in there and then you clean them out. But
at least for
2 weeks, because that will, for 2 months, that will help you just kind of refresh your mind. Did we talk, and I know Nicholas, for example, Nicholas is busy, right? But we talked and he's supposed to get back to me and you want to know because you want to be involved in this. So what are we actually doing? Well, everybody thinks the other person is working busily about their issues,
mm-hmm.
but they're not. They're not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
Nicholas is working on his issues. He probably hasn't even thought about Rob Knapp and the meeting he wants to have. So when he gets on the phone with me, he gets all excited, and then he wants to do it. And then he gets off the phone and he gets whacked in the head. So
and that's the issue. It's been very helpful for me, even if I don't send out the summary till the next morning, to just leave the folder right where it is, and then kind of cross reference with my notes and make sure. But I need to be better about putting the notes I write in my notebook in the folder. You know what I mean?
Right.
However I do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So
okay.
I would definitely do that because just the continuity of it and the simplicity of it and, just to keep you from feeling that guilty feeling.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I don't want to jump from, I'm done with you. I want to put your folder away and go and do the next thing.
Right.
But I need to take a minute and say, what do we talk about? What do I need to do? What do I need to follow up on? Put my notes in there. And then I have it. But next time I pick up the phone and talk to you,
mm-hmm.
I have it in front of me.
Yep.
So it's just a fundamental, it's just we know what to do. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Question is doing it.
Yeah, it's easy to talk about it.
Yeah, interesting. That's probably the difference between the really high producer and the high producer. The really high producer knows what to do and he does it.
Mm-hmm.
Or she does it. The ones that are good know what to do, and they do it some of the time.
Yeah, but I also think a big part of it is being able to properly delegate.
Well, that's knowing what to do and doing it.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what to
do. Yeah.
Whether you don't do it, maybe because either you're uncomfortable or you don't believe in it or you don't trust the other person or you don't think about it. But you know.
You don't think about it, yeah.
You know what the right thing to do is. So now it's a question, okay, if I know what's right, then how do I get myself to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I know delegating is the right thing to do, then delegating is a real habit, you know. It's a ritual. My wife can speak to that. Rob, I don't work for you.
Oh, yeah, I said that very line this morning, not with the Rob or the Craig, but yeah.
Yeah.
And so people that delegate habitually to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not anything that it's not because they're rude or mean or taking advantage of people. It's just they're good delegators.
Mm-hmm.
And part of their survival is delegating and trusting. That's the other thing. You know, you got to trust in order to delegate.
Yeah, but I think also here's the other thing that I found. I'm reading this book. It's a story about a woman who had an addiction to pills. You know, a mom who has a business and very successful that she became addicted to pills. I can't imagine that, but anyway, in her rehab, they talk about how. She, like many people who have those addictions, will say, no, but I was taking care of everybody else. And I forget how they put it. I'm going to look it up. But it was like, were you taking care of everybody else? Or were you finding more reasons to kind of feel sorry for yourself and creating them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of like this thing with this account. And it should have been liquidated, and it wasn't liquidated, and, you know, I'm like, oh, I have to take care of it. Well, no. I'm just, you know, it's not that. It's that I could have clued Janet in, here's what I've just done, you this is what you need to do now. And I didn't. I left it to myself because I was being kind of the martyr about it.
Yeah, interesting.
Right, but it was just interesting for me to read because I'm like, yeah, there's many times that I go home and say, well, I'm the only one that does the laundry, and I'm the only one that takes the trash out. Well, it's because I believe I'm the only one that does it right.
Well, and that, you know, that becomes a tactic by your opponent, who is the person that doesn't want to do it.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
Right? If your children or your, and as long as they do a bad job, then you're like, oh, you did a bad job. Rather than teaching them how to do it, a good job, and making them proud of themselves, you take it away from them and say you did a bad job.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the parenting mistake 101, which I've done many times.
Right.
Yeah. So I need to work on the delegating better. Like more. Ownership beyond just scheduling, you know. Now we're going to the next level of ownership, I think.
Right.
So.
Well, it's just teaching and training. I mean, look, some people are really bad at training dogs, and other people are really good at it. And what the key element of training anybody is patience.
And consistency.
Yeah, you got to be patient and you got to be consistent.
Mhm.
And you can't let them get away with not doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You just hold them accountable and do it over and over and over until they get it. And then,
yeah, that's why my 12-year-old dog still stands and waits for me to tell her she can go in the pool.
Right. Because you trained her.
Yeah.
So you took the time because you thought it was important, because the alternate was her going in the pool when she shouldn't have.
It was my 5-year-old, Golden, who never got trained.
Right.
Swims the line and runs through the house.
I mean, are we not all, I mean, we're all the same. Don't think you're like, oh my God, I'm so different.
Yeah.
I always tell people, it's not the people that, people are humans, and the key is when you get off the path to get back on it as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So working, right, so you're training for this marathon. It's not a linear training process. You're better some weeks than others. You're more consistent some weeks than others. You feel better some weeks than others.
Yeah.
And some days you feel like, oh my God, I feel fabulous. I could go forever. And other days you feel like I cannot get this 7 miles in. You know, it's like
mm-hmm.
brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's, but you keep coming back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And and that's what we have to do when we have a mission of training someone like Janet to be helpful in other things than just folders and schedules
mm-hmm.
and things.
Mm-hmm. And she wants to be, so it's not, you know, it's not like... It's not like
I'm dealing
with somebody who's resistant to it. So
you show her, and then she does it, and you watch, and then you do it, she watches. She does it, you watch.
Mm-hmm.
You do it again, she watches. She does it, you watch. Do it 4 times, and it should be pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she'll learn by watching you. So don't just do it once and expect her to remember everything.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So this is the way, you know, we teach soccer, we teach tennis, we teach golf, we teach, by the way, how's the golf
game? Good.
Good.
Getting better. Yeah. Yeah, definitely getting better. I have not been able to take a golf lesson every week. But I'm about every other week, and I'm playing every week, and I'm doing things like taking my son out and just putting, and doing, you know, practicing and stuff like that. So, I mean, I was out there the other day on a snotty golf course, and at dusk with my flip flops on and jean shorts, putting. I know that I'm not allowed to do that, but it's right by my house, so Brooks and I were out there with our. He has these. Emoji balls, they all have different emojis on them, and just having a nice time together on a beautiful night. And he was teaching me some things about reading the green. He's 10. So that was good.
That's great.
So I went to a wine tasting at the club a couple of weeks ago, and because I'm part of the wine club there, and this woman who used to be club champion and is a big wig at CBRE, very successful woman. She came walking right up to me. It was a very small affair, and she said, "Oh, I'm so glad to see you." And then she looked at her friend. She said, "She and I are the only women members of this club, so we have a common bond." And then we left, and then my friend, who I've been kind of bringing along to playing more with, trying to get her to play with other people, because she plays with her family, mostly, she finally joined the Women's Golf Association, and she was saying, you know, not knowing MJ, never had met her, and not knowing, you know, club champion, amazing golfer, and she said, "Oh, me too, and I've been playing a lot of golf together, do you play?" And I'm kind of sitting there, like, in between these two ladies, thinking, like, should I warn her? How do I do this? You know, without, you know, and because she's, you know. So then, and he says, "I do, but I haven't been playing well. My game has been all over the place." And she said, "Well, you should play in the first outing with us." And she said, I'd love to. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is a person, my friend Vicky is a person who, she's afraid to play with anybody. Never mind, like, the previous club champion, you know. She and I are about, we're on the same level, but she doesn't work, so she plays a lot more than I do, so she's passing me pretty quickly. And so she says, I'd love to. That sounds great. And I was like, wow, okay. And I said, but tell us, what have you been shooting? I wanted Vicky to hear her. She's like, I just haven't been playing very much. So, like, 85, you know, it's just, that's a bad day. Vicky's, like, looking at me, what? So then I went, another, her husband's a doctor, a radiation oncologist, and so then we ended up inviting another radiation oncologist that I play with pretty often. She actually got me involved with the Women's Golf Association. So we've got a pretty interesting group of people because she barely can get through a round, but we're playing, you know, best ball or something like that. So I went to a meeting yesterday with the Women's Golf Association for a fundraiser we're doing, and the now president sits next to me and says, I called MJ to see if she could play in the first outing, and she said she's playing with you. Can I join your foursome?
Good job.
No. Sorry. All full.
Oh, God.
I know. It's just funny. You know, it's just, Craig said, I just couldn't stand it. My husband was like, I just couldn't stand it. I couldn't take being among these women all the time. They're so competitive and weird. But, yeah, so I better get my golf game a little better, right?
Right. There you go. There's your incentive, right?
It is my incentive. So it's definitely putting me in front of some really great, interesting people. I'm enjoying myself. I am improving. And I'm getting more involved in different areas, which is neat. And I just was asked to and went to my first meeting yesterday for the philanthropy committee for my son's school.
Oh,
so, yeah. So, and I've got board meetings the rest of the week in Massachusetts. And have been asked to be the, what am I this year? The annual fund chair. So.
Oh, wow.
I'm doing what you told me to do, getting involved, getting appointments. And normally, if you hadn't told me, I would have been like, I don't know, I'll think about it. No. But I'm trying to get up that ladder toward, you said, chairman.
Chairman. Well, they look at you differently. I mean, this is what, you know, this is the biggest challenge. It's the truth. You know, it's easier to be secretary and take the minutes and let the men run things, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And fill that persona. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you're always going to be, you know, they're going to count on you to do those things and not see you as the chairman and the leader. And look, the reality is we're all busy, right? Especially somebody with two children and a husband and all this stuff. But do less, but do it better. That's the game. So become a chairman. Don't get spread so thin that you can't do a good job. That's the
right.
game.
Right.
But go ahead and go ahead, take the responsibility and ask for help and go to people and be nice and make new friends. And once they see you've led it and you did a good job, then they will give you their money.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I said to somebody the other day, I said, this idea of centers of influence is no more than taking what might take 10 to 20 years of relationships to get to the point where you're friends, and they finally refer to you, and squeezing it instead of 10 or 20 years and squeezing it down to a reasonable time frame, say 24 months.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
So it's making friends. It's how long does it take you to make a good friend? Sometimes it's pretty quick. Those friends,
good friends take a little while. I mean,
right.
No, acquaintances are easy. It's the good friends take a little while.
And that's really what you're talking about. You're talking about healthy. I mean, look at your girlfriends, the ones that you have that you, you know, would be in your mastermind group. Those are people you like and trust. And
I don't have a lot of them. I'm going to tell you. I mean, I don't have a lot that I would say that about. That I would, you know, I have friends that are people that I get together with, but very select few people that I would say, I need some advice, and I'm going to ask you your advice. Like, very few.
Yeah, that's normal, particularly men. Men are much worse. Women are easy. It's easier for women to make friends than men.
Yeah.
So it's just people always keep their quiet cards close to their vest. They're busy. They have their family. They have their, you know, their close family and a few close friends. And so,
which do you think are more judgy, men or women?
Women.
Yeah.
Women judge each other all the time. Mm-hmm. When you dress up to go out to a party, you're not really dressing up for the guys.
Right. Oh, yeah, no, of course not. I mean, my husband's definitely a very important part of it. Like, if he doesn't have a good reaction to what I'm wearing, I will change. But definitely, yeah. I'm thinking about how the women will judge me. Absolutely.
So you're not thinking about every other guy and how they'll think about you. No.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Right?
Their wives, yes.
Bingo. And so you say, which do you think are more judgmental? Are you kidding?
Right. That's why I'm always surprised when I see women and certain friends of mine. And actually, it came up recently. We were going to an event, and my husband, I was teasing him saying, what do you think will be the outfit tonight? You know, because it's like, I was told it was casual, and we would be sitting outside, and it would be hot. Well, yeah, that's not the case. It's never the case, right? So I said, what do you think? And he said about one of my friends, well, she'll be showing her cleavage. And I thought, you know, if you're really dressing for women, do you want their husbands commenting on your cleavage? No.
No.
I'm not impressed. The only people that are impressed are the guys in the room, right? I mean,
right. So she's got a different thing going on.
It's usually the ones that bought them.
Right. That's funny.
Terrible. We're going in a different direction. But anyway, no, but you're right. I mean, it takes a while to get to that point of trust, and it's the same in friendships and business and everything. The thing that I find I'm getting a little better about is not recoiling when somebody brings up anything business. Because I used to be like, oh, no, escape. I don't want to seem like I'm soliciting business. I don't want to talk about, you know, I would just recoil. So I was at a birthday dinner, and lovely women, believe it or not, except for the birthday girl, I knew none of them. And one of them was sitting next to me, and her husband's starting a business, and she was asking my advice on some financial stuff and insurance and stuff. And I took her number. I can get you some insurance quotes.
Right.
And I contacted her the next day. I mean, before it would be like, I'm sure you could find insurance somewhere. Like, it would be like, get away. I don't want to talk to you anymore. And I come off really standoffish and negative. But I finally am to the point where I'm like, I deserve the business. And I would do the right thing by you rather than you getting screwed somewhere else, you know. So.
Right.
That's changed a lot.
But that's a really big breakthrough. That's a good confidence thing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That's great.
Yes.
All right.
So when you talk about that though, and you're saying it takes, so is it just like having repetitive communications with these people, like the centers of influence and stuff? I mean, what do you think is the best route to winning the confidence?
you have to go out of your way to make it easy for them to get to know you and like you.
Right.
I mean, it's just as if you're dating. And you got to call them and ask them to play golf, to go to lunch, to do something, to have breakfast, to talk about business, to da-da-da. You got to call.
Right.
You cannot be the one waiting for the phone call and expect the or you can't be the one that says, okay, I'm going to use you as my center of influence. I'm going to send business your way. And then you do that, and then you wait, okay? Forget about it.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
You follow it. That's why we talk about having, you know, one center of influence where you meet monthly, one that you meet quarterly, and one that you meet semi-annually. All CPAs. One's up at bat, one's on deck, and the other one's in the dugout. And you've got to understand that you've got to nurture the one that's up to bat, because that's the one you're counting on for the introductions. And if you don't meet with them monthly, and you don't build that kind of strong relationship, they're going to go elsewhere.
Okay.
With their introductions. And remember, the enthusiastically endorsed list is the key to making all of that networking work.
Yeah.
Asking the question, can you enthusiastically endorse your CPA, attorney, cardiologist, whoever, right?
Yep.
Doctors live and die by their introductions from other professionals. And that, I mean, that we can take a lesson from that. They're very good at it.
Oh, God, my husband, I am so busy because of that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, I got a text this week, and, you know, this is what I said to him. This is what I want to create. This, what you have is what I want to create. The fact that I get a text from a woman on my phone named Alicia, no idea how it got in there or who this person is, and she says, I know your husband. You mentioned your husband's an orthopedic surgeon. My friend's son just broke his arm. They're going to Nicholas Children's. I think that's where he is. Do you have any advice? Well, I go to Craig. Craig calls ahead. First, he says, who is this? I just got off call. And I said, I don't know who it is. I don't want you to, you don't have to go crazy with this, but just give me, what should they, who's on call, what should I tell him? So he goes overboard, as he usually does, and he calls ahead, and he, you know, gets them to send in the x-rays and blah, blah, blah. And we don't know who this person is. We don't know. It's a third party of a person. We don't know who it is. So then I get a text from the woman, oh, my gosh, blah, blah, blah. I just got my friend, and she said your husband, and then I didn't put the names together, and now I'm just realizing, and, oh, my gosh, they've been treating me like a queen here at Children's Hospital. And I'm like, another name in my phone, I have no idea who this person is. It's a first name. I put it there. I don't know when. I don't know how. I can't find any information. Well, it turns out it's a mom of a kid in my son's class who I had a drink with. And then another woman from New York who lives right down the street who I've been trying to, had been last year, trying to kind of get together with. Because I really liked her. And both of them, it was like, in the moment, I'm like, yeah, I want to hang out with you. Like, you seem like a really nice person and a cool person, and they're both from New York and whatever. But it never went beyond that. We maybe had a couple of communications. And I said to Craig, I want that in my world, in my business world, where people say, oh, my gosh, I just got all these stock options. Call Craig, his wife does this. Like, how do I get there? Because my family is worse than me. They tell me flat out, we don't want to seem like we're bragging because it's self-serving. Brag!
Right.
I mean,
I know.
Let me be the judge of whether it's a client for me or not and brag. But they just, nobody on either side of our families will do it. And so how do I, if I can't cultivate that in my own family, how can I cultivate that in my circles of friends and my circles of influence?
By telling good stories like the one you just told, about, except they're about you, and how you help
others.
Okay.
Okay. And not being shy about it.
No, you got to tell the stories. This is why it makes sense to have a relationship. This woman was in a panic. She said this. I was able to help, and it really makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I was referred by a good client. This woman needed me, and we took care of her.
Yeah, I do think of you because you've mentioned that to me before, and I do, because I used to shy away from telling client stories because I felt like it was maybe it would be too revealing or somebody might think, oh gosh, she talks about her clients. It's not like I'm using a name, but yeah, I've started to be a little better about trying to, so I just need to be comfortable with that, just comfortable, just brag about myself.
Right. A woman came to me and she's starting a business and she needs some insurance. She came to me. And this is how much fun it was for both of us. We took care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now she's up and running, and it's really fun, and I keep track of her. And, you know, although it's, you know, you basically did her a favor, okay? But it turned out to be something where you got a lot of personal satisfaction from helping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love my job.
Mm-hmm.
That's your tagline every time. And that's why I love my job.
Okay. Yeah. And that's easy for me to say because it's true. I have been telling a lot of the women's stories because I have two recent widows now. I have one divorcee and I have all these women that they just like, they're lost. And they're just, you know, I had a client come in this week and cry in my office. And I'm going to tell that story a lot. She said, my husband died, this is years ago, a couple of years ago. She said, I could have easily gone with any of those people soliciting me, but I ran into somebody in a parking lot that recommended you, and thank God. And she's crying.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Think about how good that story is.
Yeah. Okay.
I could have gone to burn it up, and I came to you instead.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's the truth.
Yep, and I need to feel okay about just bragging about it a little.
Well, I mean, reality is, you know, just by not screwing up, most people do pretty well, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't put 100% of their money into a fair. One of my brother's friends just. He's a doctor. He put 100% of his money into a 30-year bond at the low, at like 2%.
Oh, wow.
Huh? Think about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's going to have a 50% reduction in his entire net worth.
Mm.
Think about it. I mean, so it isn't just Bernie Madoff. It's stupid. It's stupidity.
Right.
Just because somebody's a doctor doesn't mean they're smart.
Oh, they're the worst. I mean,
they
open that surgical center, and my husband was like, so-and-so just bought so much more than us. I'm like, well, you know, that means they're willing to lose it all, you know? And then I said to him, ask the guy if he's ready to lose it all, because you have no idea how this is going to go. It's completely a private equity investment. And the way you look at private equity is you're putting $100,000 in, they never come back, ever.
Right.
And so he goes to the guy and he says, this is what my wife says, after the guy committed like $300,000. And the guy said, oh, no, I did a home equity one.
Oh, God.
And I said, Craig, does that sound like a smart move? He was like, no, not at all. And that guy ended up having to sell his shares. He lost his job, and he had an issue that's public in the papers, and it was bad, and the guy lost his job, and he ended up, unless you're practicing and you're doing surgery, by their bylaws, you cannot be a participant investor in the surgical center. And so he had to sell them at a discount, But now he's got a home equity line. He's got no, basically no shares, and because he sold them at a discount, and he's got no job. And I said, remember how amazingly brilliant that guy was to you when he was bragging about, you know, buying in three times that you did? I'm like, we've been getting dividend checks. He's getting nothing.
So brag. I mean, seriously, don't brag, but tell those stories. It's just judgment. And you know what? Somebody said to me, how can we justify our fees now that they can't be gotten our fees?
So. Oh, my God. Of course I can justify my fees. I have no problem at all justifying my fees.
Right.
None.
Because you have to make other decisions than just asset allocation, okay?
Yeah.
It's keeping in the market, or it's not putting $300,000 out of a mortgage loan, a second loan, you know, into a private deal. I mean, it's just stuff like that you can't.
I have so many stories to tell on why I can't do my fees. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I know, and I'm terrible about it. I never do it. I don't know why. I guess it's because I've been married to the surgeon and the ex-U.S. ski team Olympic athlete. You know, it's like he's been the shining one, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm here. And my claim to fame has always been that I supported him financially, but I never said how. So. Right? That is interesting.
Yeah.
These are always such great psychological sessions.
I know. So write down your stories so you know them.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things you should do. You should write them down and then practice them. And then when you get the opportunity, bang, you're ready. You got the story.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that's what we do. That's what we do in public speaking. Is we figure out interesting stories that make a point. So you make a point, tell a story. Make a point, tell a story. And the other thing you could do would be to practice by getting up and speaking to organization. I mean, just taking the opportunity and then make a point.
I love doing that.
Practice putting together a nice speech for an organization, and go ahead and do it. And then you've got a million of those stories then memorized because you give speeches here and there and there and there. And that's always good, by the way. I mean, those are great opportunities. And as a success, remember you said you wanted to get an article in the paper, right? So you advertise to get the book. Well, giving speeches is just the article in words.
Yes.
Okay. So you say, I want to get my article out there. Well, get this by going out and speaking.
Mm-hmm.
As a successful woman, helping others to be successful. I mean, you can get those opportunities. You just have to reach out and say, I'd like to speak. You know, I'd like to tell other women how to gain a little confidence and be more successful. It's a great thing.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, when you read books about women and books that encourage women to be more out there and willing to put themselves out there, lean in, whatever those books, there is a lot about that, just like being, without being obnoxious, just being able to tell your story.
Right, actually by being interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Those are interesting women. They wouldn't be able to write those books or tell those stories if they weren't interesting. And so it's just that they're a little shy or a little bit like, oh, I can't brag. So it's like not talking to strangers. You know, it's all these things we grew up with, and women are so compliant and such good students, you know, the boys are off getting in trouble because they're, you know, they hear the rules and then say, why is the rule there? Maybe there's something fun in breaking that rule. The women are like, I need to get an A in this class. I'm going to do exactly what the teacher tells me.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah.
Right. And so they become very compliant with everything. And then somebody says, don't talk to strangers. They go, of course not. And don't do this. And be humble. And, you know, don't brag. And
don't brag. Be humble. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so you got wait a minute, I'm humble, but I've got a very good story.
Powerful engagement.
Yeah.
I'm into everything. I'm sorry I wasn't here early. I was going to come visit. If I didn't have Robert, I would.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.